Hello, and welcome to the Just a Dog Trainer podcast, where we talk about everything under the sun, but with a dog trainer's unique point of view, namely mine. I'm Laurie C. Williams, aka the Canine Diva, and I've been a dog training professional for over 35 years, not only training dogs, but also helping them and their humans establish a strong bond and a partnership as they travel through this journey called life. Come along with us. Hey, everyone, what's up? Welcome to the Just a Dog Trainer podcast. I'm Laurie C. Williams, aka the Canine Diva. And in my podcast, I want to really broaden everyone's horizons and introduce not only some dog trainers that you might not have met or heard from yet, but also talk about a lot of different concepts, training ideas, how to reach dogs, how to reach the people at the other end of the leash, because that is very important. And I want to I don't want my podcast to be the same people over and over again. So I hope to introduce you guys to some new voices. I am a firm believer that we need to not only preach to our choir, but we need to extend past our choir and add more voices to that choir. So that is what I'm out to do. Today I have Stan Smith with Iron Sharp Canine. I have been following Stan probably for the last couple of years, ever since I got onto social media. It was very quick to see that he and I, even though we don't exactly train the same way, we have a lot of similarities, which we will talk about today. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Stan and let Stan, just tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into dog training, what inspired you to start training dogs, and because you're, relatively young guy, so definitely a lot younger than I am. So I want to hear what inspired you and how you got into it.
All right. Well, my name is Stan Smith from Iron Sharp Canine, and we've been training dogs for about 10 years now. When I was in college, I had a dog and I didn't do anything with him. We didn't have any training or even really a line of communication. He was just my dog. So I think my kid opened the front door and the dog ran out. And this was before I knew about recalls and how to come back. So I started chasing him. And then, long story short, ended up getting hit by a car. So I lost my dog that night by something simple, not having a recall. So the next dog I got, I was like, man, I got to find some training. I got to do something with the dog. And I had torn my meniscus in college, so I couldn't physically compete anymore the way that I would like to. But then I had Rocco, and he was very athletic. He was very eager to please. He wanted to do a lot of stuff. So he basically took my athletic abilities and did it all for me. And that's what really brought me to the protection side of things, because at the end of the day, it's competition. The dog is competing against the decoy. You're competing against the dog to make the dog better. So it just reminded me a lot about sports. So I fell in love with it, and I've been there ever since.
Okay. I can't think of a much more inspiring reason to get into dog training than losing your dog. That's a very traumatic experience in and of itself. One thing I will say, too, for my audience that knows me, a lot of them know me from, and I don't know, I don't think you and I, did we ever talk about the TV show that I was on?
Yeah, with the elephant, right?
That's what everybody remembers. Yeah, there was an elephant. There was an elephant there, yes. But yeah, so Stan and I also have that in common, because, and I can't remember whether I saw you on Top Dog saw you on social media or whether it was vice versa. I can't really remember which was before, the chicken or the egg. I don't remember, but Stan and I do share that we both were on a competition reality show with a dog, which is a lot different than being on an island with a bunch of crazy drunk people. Although there was drinking on mine, but that's another podcast for another day. But no, so we did. So I know that's one of the things that I definitely was like, okay, yeah, we have a lot in common. One of the best things that I also noticed about you, two things. First thing is you end pretty much all of your videos with "take care of your dog." I love that. That struck me from the very beginning. And I don't know if that's something that it was from derivative from how you got into dog training. You what At the end of the day, that's what we want to do. We want to take care of our dogs. That's why we're doing this. That's why we do everything we do. And then this is the other thing. And a lot of people will notice this if they go to your social media, which will definitely include all your way for people to contact you and go on your social media. You mostly train without your dogs wearing any, definitely no tools. And usually not even like collars. Like you're just, your dogs are naked and you're out there doing all these things, which proves how they are working with you and staying with you because they want to. And absolutely, you have made it beneficial for them to do so with a lot of the positive reinforcement that you do. I would venture to say, just from looking at you, I could tell you probably use positive reinforcement 99% of the time, because you can't get what I saw you doing. You can't get that without that. And this is one of the things that I want people to start having a more critical eye and critical thinking when they watch dog trainers, because everybody's so quick to say, oh, they're doing this. And they're always looking for ways to disqualify a person. Look for the, like, if you know what you're doing, you can look and you can see beyond all that other junk that we get bogged down with. And you can see, wow, that dog is doing it because that is his partner. Like, when I saw you with Rocco, like Rocco is like your teammate and your partner, and he's gonna be with you. And so is Boots, which we'll talk about him in a minute too. But yeah, that's huge. And that was huge for me, because that's something that I don't see a lot, particularly on social media. I do not see that partnership very much with a lot of dog trainers. So I love that. So tell me about that. How you end everything with take care of your dog. What is the reason that you do that?
So we actually adopted that phrase from my buddy Trevor. That was his catchphrase. And like you said, it's just moving. So when you're training the dog, when you're working out the dog, when you're feeding the dog right, all you're doing is taking care of it. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people overlook the fact that your dog should like you. You should like your dog.
Absolutely.
Originally, I was kind of in like more of a dark, depressed state. You know, like I said, mm-hmm. You know, didn't really know what I wanted to do in life, but I knew my dog was there for me. So we developed a really good relationship. So like you said, he's working for me, or he's working with me, not for me. And, you know, the tools and all of those things, like, yeah, there's some success in them. But what happens when your dog doesn't have those things on? And like my dog, when he got out, he didn't have anything on because it wasn't a prepared situation. So it's right. Like, I never my dogs to be reliant on those tools, because my voice, I'm always going to have that. A whistle, I can always have those things. So I want my dogs to understand, regardless of what you have on, you still need to be listening. And like you also said, I want my dogs to look like they're having a good time. When we went on America's Top Dog, I think that was literally one of the reasons why we got picked, because it was, he could do everything and he looked like he was enjoying it as well. So I think we like that aspect of it. Because you see some dogs, and I mean, and they're sharp, they're doing everything right, but they're not happy. They're not wanting to. And it's like, yeah, you know, I'd rather have my dog be a little sloppier and enjoy it than be looking like a robot. Because that's not why we got a dog. If you wanted a robot, you could have bought a robot dog. So
right. That's for sure. They have them now.
Yeah, they do.
But you know what? That is the thing that I noticed with the relationship you have with it. As a matter of fact, if I have time, I'm gonna show a picture of my youngest, Juliet, because I'm about to send her to Uncle Stan in a little while. She's gonna take a trip to Texas because she's a lot. She is actually the first Dalmatian, and I don't know if you knew that Dalmatians actually were originally guard dogs. They ran alongside with the carriage and all that kind of romantic thing that they did. But they also are very fierce defenders. They also protected the carriage. They protected the horses from like thieves and bandits when they were delivering mail, and also from animals, other animals that would come in and try to get the horses. So anyway, they can be very fierce in that way. But I gotta be honest, most of the Dalmatians I've had for the past 30 years have been pretty, I don't say they were not docile by any stretch of the imagination, but they didn't really have that edge. Like, I never noticed it. My young female that's just turned a year, she does. And that's why I'm sending her to Uncle Stan, because
I'm not used to that. Because especially at my age, I was like, well, okay, I finally get the Dalmatian like that. And yeah, a few decades too late. But anyway, so Top Dog, I just want to tell people about Top Dog. And I would love to just hear kind of brief about your experiences on that show. Top Dog, for those of you who might not have been familiar, it ran, I think, maybe a couple of seasons. I watched it on A&E, and it was primarily like protection sport type activities. And most of the competitors were police officers or in law enforcement. And then they would have one competitor on each episode that was a civilian. Like you. So you were the civilian on your episode and with Rocco, and you guys hung tight. I think the only thing that got him was that nose work, if I remember. It was the nose work. And I bet you've been training nose work big time ever since then. But yeah, that was the one thing that got him. So tell me a little bit of that. How did you get selected for that? What was your experience like on the show?
Yeah, so how we got selected, somebody actually tagged me in a post on social media and was like, hey, ultimate dog agility course or something. It was like, Stan, whatever, I'm going to submit. So send the videos, photos, and everything. And then about 2 weeks later, we get a phone call. And, you know, they scheduled a Zoom interview. They talked to us. They was like, well, when can you get out to California? And we were like,
wow.
It was a pretty quick, you know, process. You know, we did two interviews, and I had so much content of Rocco climbing over walls, jumping through windows, doing everything that they were literally creating the course for. So they're like, well, this is going to be a good look, you know. And then we got out there, and I was only training for about 3 years at the time. So I'm up against these 15-year police officers.
I know.
and their dogs. And we're just like, all right, this is my little $100 dog. And, at first, you know, we kind of got some looks because, again, I'm a black dude with cowboy boots with a pit bull. Like, so hey, what's going on here? But after the course, you know, we got to sample the course, basically get your dog used to it. And he didn't have any issues with anything because he's literally been doing all of that stuff since I've had him.
So
that people were like, huh, okay. And then after when the show aired and we had the fastest time on that obstacle course, but I think it was like a minute 30. Everybody was like, oh, okay, these guys
got some respect.
But the nose work, we just had no experience.
Yeah.
You know, I was in odor, but I didn't know how to read them. I was nervous. So, yeah, that was a little bit of a cluster there.
But I bet you're training it now, though. Have you been training it since then?
Yeah, so we were supposed to go back for the second and third season, but that's when COVID happened.
That's right. That was during that. Do you know if they're going to start it back up again, or have you heard anything?
I don't think the second and third season did as well because they actually changed the concept. They made it more inclusive for dogs that really probably shouldn't have been there, and they took away like aspect of it. So I don't think it got as much engagement. Second season, so I don't think it's coming back. But it was a good time.
Yeah, I watched it. I watched it because I saw it was quality. Like, I gotta be honest, I don't watch a lot of stuff like, you know, on Animal Planet and stuff like that, which I'll never get an endorsement from Animal Planet for me saying that. But, you know, there's a lot of shows on it that are like just fluff and but there was good, well-trained dogs on that show. So right away, I watched it. And I, you know, come to think of it, I think I did watch it a season after you were on. And then that was probably about it. I don't know if I was in a different place, so I wasn't really like keeping up with it after that. But it was a good show. I did like it. And would you say that were the people cool on it after a while, after you got their respect? Or was it still a little bit standoffish, or they thought that they were a little bit, you know, high and mighty because they were, you know, in law enforcement or whatever.
No, after we went through that obstacle course, they started including us in some conversations.
Right, there you go. Well, that's what I always say. The best way to get people to treat you better, if you beat them at their own game, they start respecting you, which I had to go through that a lot through my whole career in dog sports, but yeah, so good. Yeah, because you kick butt on that one.
Definitely.
One of my friends, Dan Rhodes, he was an officer. He actually won our episode. And after the drug detection course, like, we're sitting there talking, and he can tell I was a little sad, embarrassed, all this same stuff. And he just told me, he said, "Hey, you just look like a new handler. Like your dog is for you. Like, you just know what to do." He's like, "You keep putting it in, you know, just some words of encouragement."
Oh, yeah.
And then he was like, us down to his police dog competition, and we were the only civilian that competed in that as well. And the first year we won, we lost by 30 seconds. I didn't know how to draw my gun out. I took a penalty.
Oh,
yeah, it was a whole embarrassing again. I've won that competition, and it's basically kind of a smaller America's Top Dog. So the dogs have to go through obstacle courses, and then there's a bite and then a recall as well. So we had some pretty nice, interesting people off of America's Top Dog, and it kind of put us into the public eye, per se, of the dog world, which is kind of was a blessing and a curse at the same time. Because overnight success thing, and it's like, well, I've been training every day for 3 years without anybody watching, so it really solid from this perspective. And a lot of people, I think they wanted the opportunity, but they didn't get picked. So, you know, I think it was a little jealousy and envy in it to try to make sure that I didn't look as good as I was. But, you know, that's old saying. I don't really care about what people really got to say about what we're doing, because at the end of the day, my dogs are happy, and the people that come out, they get better. So.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I mean, you know, it sounds like very similar to, you know, my experience. Now, probably one of the real big differences with mine is we were there for weeks. We were all had to live in a house together, and we were there for 6 weeks that I was trapped in a house with these people. So that in and of itself was, and yeah, so because it was a more reality showish than yours was. But as far as with the dogs working and the actual challenges that the dogs had to do, those were all real. But the, you know, they had all that, you know, they had one like showmance for this one guy and girl. And, you know, I was the oldest woman on it. And, you know, I'm not about that craziness. So then they wanted me to be like the angry black woman, getting people straight. But you know what? I did not play to the camera. I did not do the things that they probably thought I was going to do with, you know, the head going and telling people off. I didn't do any of that. I just would look at them. But if you have never seen it, it's on Amazon Prime, because you should see. I definitely, yeah, I did not do what they wanted me to do. But, you know, I came in runner up to the winner, and I got robbed. We got totally robbed, but that's another podcast, so we're not going to talk about that right now. But anyway, so let's go back to protection sports. Because, let me give you one of the motivations why I wanted to talk about this. So, I've been in dog sports, more of the mainstream conventional dog sports, AKC, obedience, agility, you know, and some of the newer sports that they've had, like in the last 10, 15 years. They have one called rally obedience. And, you know, that's what I've been doing. And I have been, if not the only black person at a competition. Maybe today, if I go, there might be one or two others. And I'm talking out of hundreds of people that are there. Now, that's my experience, where I'm like the only. Then I get on social media, because I have to be honest, I was not familiar with protection sports that much. I mean, I knew they existed, but I wasn't, and I do not know, I'm not versed in the training of it or any of that. Now that I've learned more, because I did have a guy come out to my facility and put on a workshop. And I was looking, I was like, yeah, we do that. Yeah, we do that. Yeah, I've been doing that. So there's a lot of stuff in it that I'm like, okay, that's not that foreign to me. But I get on social media and I see all these black people doing protection sports or training in protection sports. And I'm like, I guess I've been in the wrong sport. I don't know, because what is the draw, like, or let's say, because I know you probably knew about competitive dog obedience with like the mainstream. What drew you more to the protection sports competition side than to the, like I said, and I'm using AKC because that's what most people are familiar with, But there's other venues, there's UKC and stuff like that. What drew you more to the protection sports side as opposed to the more mainstream, conventional type of sports?
I think the main thing was my dog breed. So, you know, the pit bull is a dog that's accepted in a lot of things. So instead of putting my dog somewhere where he's going to be the outcast, let's do this and, you know, where he is going to be included. And then, like, the competition style of it, it reminded me so much of, you know, basketball, football, track, where you have to be the best you, and then somebody else is doing it. But if you're better than them, like, you're going to win. And it just really made sense to me. And the more that I've talked about agility and even duck diving, all of these things, like, it's still similar, but I think it's not as inclusive for, you know, people that look like us with those kind of dogs.
Right.
And I think that's the draw for, you know, African Americans, that they want to go somewhere that they can be accepted instead
sure.
of trying to be the difference maker that mends the gap. And me, right. I'm so, like, I've always been around, you know, all races and all everything my whole life. So I have no problem talking to this kind of person or this kind of person. So I can, you know, adapt very easily. But some people are only used to interacting with
sure.
So I think that is the draw for us a lot, is it's more included. But I think, you know, the agility stuff, even the frisbee, like the trick stuff, like that stuff is really entertaining. And actually doing that kind of stuff is way harder than protection stuff. Because in the protection world, if you got a good dog, like, that dog is going to carry you, because all you have to do is basically let that dog go. And dancing and the frisbees and the freestyles and those things, like, you have to work with the dog, and that dog has to really continue to work with you, and you can't really correct them for not doing it.
No, like, not at all.
Catch it, let me correct you. Like, that's not going to make them want to do a backflip catch.
So no,
on different ways to motivate the dog. So I'm actually liking the frisbee and the tricks and stuff, you know, a lot more. And it's not as, I mean, I personally haven't been into it too much, but I don't think it's as cutthroat, because in protection, there's a lot of gatekeeping. People won't tell you certain things because they don't want you to have this piece of information. My thing is, like, I'm going to tell you everything that you can do, because if I beat you, I want your dog to be the best it could be. I don't want me to have a leg on you and be like, okay, yeah, you don't know how to do something, and that's why I beat you. And a lot of people aren't like that. They actually will try to hurt you to make their dog look better. So
sure.
That's what I don't like about the protection side of the world. But, you know,
well, let me be honest. Let me be honest with you. It's that way in like agility and competitive dog obedience as well. They're probably the one difference I would say is in the main, and I use the word mainstream because more people feel that that's more accessible to them in terms of, there's like an agility trial every weekend in my area, like every weekend. If I wanted to go to an agility trial, I could, with one or two hours drive, there's one every single weekend, sometimes during the week, and competitive dog obedience as well. So it's kind of at our fingertips. But there are people in that are at maybe a high level that are that way. They gatekeep as well. And they're, you know, they're not very welcoming to newcomers at all. Like, if you're new going in there, if you don't have somebody that is, you know, coaching you, like, I usher a lot of new people in. Now, you know, for the last probably decade, I've been more ushering a lot of people and coaching new people in, because it's hard to just jump in there if you don't have, like, you don't know, you know, where to go and all the rules. And, you know, there's a lot of little nuances in it that you got to really know. So it's that way too, in that sport. But yeah, I think that whole cutthroat thing is there in every sport probably. But I will say in the mainstream sports, you can just be an amateur and have fun with your dog, and kind of just ride, like, ignore all that, just ride through it. You could still get a championship on your dog. You could still do a lot of things. You don't have to be in with that quote unquote elite group that is, you know, kind of stuck up and, you know, doesn't want to help newcomers and all that. You know, to be honest with you, quite frankly, a lot of the people at that elite stage, I don't even know if they're having fun anymore. Like, I watch them, they've lost the fun. I know some professional athletes in like football, basketball, or whatever, they'll talk about that where they stop having fun with their sport. I see that in dog sports too. I see the people, and the dog certainly isn't having fun, because you can look at the dog and tell they're not having fun. The humans, you know, because like me, everything I've done it to have fun with my dog. Like from day one, it was never anything that was trying to make money doing. There really isn't a lot of money that you can be made in that. I have made money in it, and that I've helped train other people, but no, it's completely an amateur sport, and for little ribbons, sometimes bigger ribbons, as you can see behind me, sometimes bigger ribbons, but it isn't that, like, there's no money in it. It's really, but there is pride and there's bragging rights and stuff like that, which is what a lot of people still will gatekeep for that reason. They want to be the top or whatever. But it's ways to avoid that.
One thing I've noticed is, like, when people are really at the top, they have no, like,
there you go.
So there was this guy, he was like a 17-time world champion with the disc, the frisbee tricks and all that. I sent him a message and I'm like, hey, you know, I want to learn how to do this. Like, how much is it going to cost? He was like, I train at this time. He trains at 5 o'clock in the morning in this park. He said, if I show up, he'll show me whatever. And I showed up, kept showing up. And he was giving me all of his trips and tricks and everything, because he knew, one, I probably wasn't going to put in as much time as he did. But he wants other people to pick up the pastime. One thing I've noticed is people are at the higher levels of, you know, even the protection sport, like, they want other people to do it. And I've been lucky enough to, like, come across the right people. And I got screwed over a little bit, you know, in the very beginning, being naive. But the more I deal with it, the people that I'm interacting with, we're at the top of their game. And they see, Stan, you put in the word, hey, try this, it'd be a little easier, you know. Hey, this is what I did in that situation. I'm like, okay, cool. So, but the people that are trying to gatekeep and keep other people down, I don't think they've really ever really had that sense of success. And if they did, it was never like early in life, and it was the only thing that they had was the dog. So the dog was their whole image. And like you said, I didn't do dogs to have an image. I got into dogs because I never wanted to lose my dog again. So everything that we're doing it for fun. It just so happened we're pretty athletic and we're pretty, you know, committed to doing things at a high level. And that's just how it all has always been with me, from running track to playing basketball. Like, I may not be the person everybody thinks is going to do something, but I'm always going to be there when it matters.
So. Right. Well, I'm telling you, you also are missing your calling in agility, because every time I see you running the obstacle course with your dog, you do it just like the dog does it. In agility, though, you don't do the obstacles yourself. It's all you handling, getting the dog to do all of that stuff. But it still can be very physical. And the funniest, it's not funny, haha, but the most odd thing about dog agility is probably the average age of a person that starts dog agility is at least probably 40, 50, because their kids are grown and out of the house. They don't have to take kids to basketball and soccer and piano lessons and blah, blah, blah. They don't have, it's them. It's finally their time with their dog. And they also have the disposable income, because to train in agility does take a lot of private lessons. I don't care who you are. It takes a lot of private lessons because there's so much technique to it, to get your dog to go around those obstacles fast. And here's where you would excel, because I don't know if you're as fast as your dog, but you're pretty doggone close. You could really move. Whereas a lot of people, like I said, they're in their 50s. They can't keep up with their dog. Like, if I ever am fortunate enough to do agility with my dog, again, I would literally have to stand in the middle of the field and say, there, I would have to do all my handling, would have to be expert that I could get them to do, because running with them is not an option for me anymore. Whereas you could totally do, you could stay with your dog. So anyway, and so you don't give up. I mean, like, I know you haven't even really pursued it, but seriously, when I look at you, I'm like, man, I wish he'd do agility. I so do, because that they need somebody like you in that sport. But you go ahead and do your frisbee right now. But when you get tired of that, come on over to agility and see. But anyway, the other thing I wanted to say about protection sports, that, because I don't think people understand this, because there was one, I'm not going to mention any names, but there's a trainer that he has a big following, and he was talking a lot of ish maybe a few months ago. I turned it off, and I didn't want to hear it anymore. But he was talking a lot of ish about protection sports in general, of how it is derivative of law enforcement, and that's why so many, that is, it is, that's true. But the way he talked about it made it seem like he doesn't understand why any African Americans would want to do it, because we're the ones that are we're a marginalized group that a lot of times receives a lot of the brunt of law enforcement. So then why are we doing a sport that's like that? And I was like, you don't get it. You don't get it at all, because I feel like it's the complete opposite. I feel like, yeah, you know what? We of all people, we probably need more protection than anybody. We need to protect ourselves as well. So why would we not want to have like dogs that actually can also help us in that way? So what, we're not allowed to do that? We have to be just victims of it. We can't take control of it ourselves, and at least that's the way I feel. I feel if anybody needs a protection dog, it's us. So that's what draws me to it. I do want to make a disclaimer right now, and I know you probably talk to people, and because I bet so many people come up to you, I want my dog to be a protection dog, da, da, da. There's so much liability in that that I don't know if people realize how much liability there is also, because your dog better be on, and your dog better be extremely trained that you have complete control, because if it gets out of your hands and the dog doesn't out or doesn't isn't able to be called off someone that they don't want, that you don't want them to, you don't need protection from, then that's going to be a problem. And liability wise. And I don't know that people, that's one of the things that social media bothers me about, because it's very alluring, very attractive that, wow, did you see what that dog did? Oh man, if I had a dog like that. But you got to be careful and make sure that you are a good enough trainer that can live up to what that dog's ability and what that dog can do. So anyway, if I could hear some thoughts from you on that part of it, the liability.
Yeah, I mean, people always like, I want a dog that's gonna eat everybody. And I'm like, why? I'm like, well, I need protection. I'm like, so you're gonna have a dog that you can't take anywhere. If people come over, you got to put it in the back room. You can't trust it around your kids. You can't trust it when you're not there. Like, that doesn't sound like a very peaceful solution to, having a protection dog per se. Like, I tell them, you want your dog to be social. You want your dog to have obedience. You want your dog to be able to go anywhere and be around anything. Because if that dog can't be with you, it can't protect you. And we're not going to get into a situation where we know, okay, I'm about to get into a situation. Let me go get my dog. Like, if something happens, the dog needs to be out in the house. Somebody comes to your front door, or you're walking to, your groceries at the store. You need to
I
have that
know.
with you. And if the dog can't walk in the store without trying to bite everybody, you're going to have that dog in a crate, or you're going to have that dog at home. So it can't do what it needs to do. So yes, having a dog that is uncontrollable is a big liability, and it's you're not peaceful at that point. I have dogs
Right.
and kids. I know
Yeah.
if they can be out, he's gonna be in there in the corner. The worst thing he's gonna do is steal their noodles, and that kind of stuff. But if somebody comes to that front door, he knows exactly what he's supposed to do, and he will have a blast doing it. And I think people think protection sports means that you're gonna have an uncontrollable, dangerous animal. I've actually been bitten more times from dogs who haven't done bite work,
Yeah.
well-trained bite dogs. So
Right.
think about, we're not teaching the dogs to do anything that they don't already know how. People are,
Right.
does your dog bite? And I say, yeah, he has teeth. Like,
Right. Right.
probably not. So a lot of people think, oh, you're teaching that dog how to bite, so now they're going to want to bite everybody. It's like, no, that's not how it works.
No.
So
No, like you said, it's the opposite, like you said. It's because number one, it's training. I mean, really, that's really what it comes down to. Because I have to, that's another thing people will see if they go to your socials. Your dogs are around your kids. They're around other dogs. Because I have talked to people say, oh, yeah, my dog's such and such and this and that. And I don't know. I think he was talking about not IPO. What's the other one? There's IPO and then there's.
PSA?
Yeah. PSA. PSA. Anyway, he was talking about, oh, my dog's ranked this and that or whatever. And then he said he started bragging about how he can't have the dog around any other dogs, like it would kill other females. I'm like, that's not good. Like, why would I want a dog that I can't have any other dogs around? And yeah, so I don't know. I just think it's important for people to not get, or to people be reminded that number one, protection sports is a little bit different than having a protection, not a little bit, a lot different than having a dog, protection dog. Sports is one thing, an actual working protection dog is another. And dogs know the difference, I think. I would hope they do, because I know when I, even the, like with mainstream sports, they know when they're on the field to do a sport as opposed to when they're in the house. But anyway, yeah, so that, thank you for that, because I think that's really important to emphasize the liability, because it is very attractive. It's very alluring when it's all over social media, and like people will stop and watch that and say, how cool and all that. But there's a lot that goes into it, number one, with training wise, and there is a lot of liability behind that. You got to be a great trainer. Now, I did want to ask you, have you seen a rise in the number of women that come to you and want to have be trained in your dog trained in protection sports side of it? Have you seen like a rise in it in recent years? Because it was a predominantly male, and it still is predominantly male, but I see a lot more women. I don't know. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I mean, I have, and when they come out, I always even pitch it to them. I was like, you don't have to have the biggest, baddest protection dog in the world, but you want a dog that's going to do something. And even if that's getting a dog to bark on command and give you enough time to get back to your car, like those things are going to keep you safe. It's easier to handle the dogs because they're not trying to alpha them. They're trying to work with the dog. So you'll start, right. they're winning these competitions, and you know, because they're using not necessarily as much force as a man would to get the same results, and the dog wants to work for the woman. So yeah, there's definitely a rise in it. And I think it's good. And also even having like a female decoy, because I mean, if your dog has never been a woman in a decoy suit, like in a real situation, that dog may be like, nah, I've never done this. So you want to try to prepare the dogs for as much as possible. So we need more women coming in, because they need to know how to properly work a dog, and the dogs benefit from it as well. It's like one hand washes the other. It's the same thing about your dog seeing different races. So if your dog's only working on a white guy, or only worked on black, and they see something different, they may be a little confused. And that little confusion in a real situation could be the difference of you going
That's true.
Home and you not work. So you want to expose your dog to as much as possible. Put them in as many different situations, you know, slick floors, a low light, noises, all of these different things to build up the dog's confidence. And like you said, it's just training at the end of the day. There's no fast track to it. Everybody always, how long does it take to get a dog? I'm like, if you want a dog like Rocco, that's a 2-3 year process. And that's with having a dog physically able. If you come with a dog that you ain't do nothing with and you expect me to perform a miracle, like, I don't do that. There's a lot that goes into it. And I think people see, like you said, on the internet where they're seeing the end results, but nobody's really talking about the process that it took.
No.
How many dogs did this person wash out before they got that one dog? And people, I can do it with my dog. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
Specifically tested and selected to do certain things. And if your dog wasn't selected or knows how to do those things, you're never going to reach that level. And it's just, you have to be realistic. I don't expect Boot to be as good as Rocco, but Boot is good in what he's good at. And again, he has teeth and he's going to let you know he's there. So even as high flying and as powerful as Rocco, he's still impressive in his own way.
Definitely. In fact, I do want to touch on the different dogs that you have. So you have Rocco, and he's an American pit bull.
Yeah, he was $100, so I mean he's calling a
He's
lot.
okay. He's your quintessential pit bull. Like what you do? Yeah. And then you. This is the crazy part. You guys, Stan does protection sports, bite work with his Australian Shepherd, which is very rare to see, but and that's Boots, right? How
And
old is he? He because I remember when he was a baby, so he's not that old.
he's two now, so he was
Okay,
two.
he's two, and like really, he's right there, and loves it. You can tell that dog absolutely loves. And then did you get a little dog too recently?
So my wife has a schnauzer, but
Okay.
he doesn't
Why
play.
you put that on your wife? So, but because I saw him in the beginning when you got him. So he's just chilling at the house now, or is he being trained to do anything?
He just makes noise. Like he has a
You
little
should have
dog.
known better than to get a schnauzer. I would have told you that. If you
Yeah.
want a dog that barks. But hey, that is a deterrent in and of itself. Someone comes to the house and they hear a dog bark, and they usually say, I'll go to a different house. And then you had a cat. I saw you doing some stuff with the cat. Is that
Yeah.
right?
So we had some outdoor cats, to keep the mice and stuff like that down. And then we had met this guy at Super Zoo. I think his name's like the Real Trap King or something, and he trains cats. And he
Okay.
had a cat ringing a bell, and I was like,
Oh yeah.
I
I
think.
trained cats. I had a cat that I trained before I was able to have a dog. I was living in an apartment that I couldn't have dogs, so I said, okay, I'll get a cat. So I trained him to fetch, and he was one of the cats. Yes, I was one of those annoying people that walked my cat on a leash, and he walked nicely with me on a leash. So and then when I could get a dog, I said, okay, you can go be a cat now. I left him alone. But yeah, cats can learn some stuff. The great thing about cats is they're super food motivated. There's no such thing as a cat not being food motivated, whereas some dogs, quote unquote, aren't food motivated. You won't find a cat that doesn't want food. If they don't eat, if they don't want to work for food and pay attention for food, then they're sick. That's the first way to know a cat is sick. They won't eat. So anyway, and is that it? Did I see it? I thought I saw you with a Frenchie. Maybe that was one of your clients.
Yeah, so Trevor has Frenchies, and we've been doing some stuff with her,
Okay.
getting her on
Yeah,
like tours, that kind of stuff. Yeah, so yeah, we
because
can.
I'll be going through your page. I'm like, what did he get now? And I'll watch. Yeah.
I mean,
Another thing you do.
I like
What's
having
that?
a variety of dogs because you get so
Yeah.
working with one, it gets boring after a while. So I mean, we've worked with Great Danes, we've worked
Oh yeah.
all the way down to Chihuahuas. We had a Frenchie doing bite work before. So I
Oh
mean, it's,
yeah.
and I like the challenge, me personally. Just
Yes.
give me a dog that's
Well,
supposed to do it, and let's see how far we can get.
like I said, don't play with me because you go out to have a Dalmatian very soon. She would be great. She would be great to work with. I'll tell you that. So yeah. So I think that you really demonstrate like how you might train differently. And I don't, like I said, I only like using that because I don't think you do train much differently than I do. I don't think you'll mind me saying that. You had talked to me about the Clicker Expo at one time that you were considering attending the Clicker Expo. And that's one of the things I want people to understand. Like, you never know who is going to hear you or see you on, if you're on the internet, if you're on social media, you never know who's watching you. You never know. I mean, people are like making videos and talking, and I don't know if they really realize that it's going across the world, and you don't know who's going to hear it. And you don't know if there's something you might say that is going to reach a person. And when I say reach, for the good or the bad, I don't know. Like it depends. And that's why you really do want to make sure if what your goal is spreading the word about training, encouraging people to train, encouraging other dog trainers to educate themselves. And if you want to be a positive influence on people, then you gotta make sure that what's coming out of your mouth reflects that, because you don't want to say things that are going to turn people off. So I have always felt good that, and you're not the only one who does that. Like, I'm not a representative of forest-free dog training by any means. I don't even like that term, and I don't use that label. I don't like it. I don't like labels, period. But I do like that I have a good following of what's quote unquote balanced trainers. I hate that label too, but you know what I mean. If we have to use those, there's some different qualifiers. But I have a good following of people that will say, "Hey, I heard you say talk about this or whatever," and ask me questions. If I was there being a jerk and turning people off and like fighting with everybody and acting like I was better and putting people down, if I was doing that, they're not going to do that. They're not going to ever approach me and ask me anything or say. So I try really hard to be that person that, because I had people that were that for me. Like, I didn't start out training the way I did. I've been training for 35 years. So when I first started, everybody was balanced. Like, there was no, the positive reinforcement wasn't really a thing like it is today. We never used food. Like, that was a cardinal sin. Especially not the way that we do it today. So I don't know. I mean, I would like to think I would have found my way to the way I train eventually anyway, but there was somebody who showed me stuff like that. The first clicker I ever held in my hand was, I want to say it was probably 1997 or 98. I'd never even heard of a clicker. Somebody had to show it to me and then told me about a book to read more about it. And that's how I did. So anyway, just saying all that to say, I think when I saw your training, I right away saw the similarities in things. And that's one of the reasons why I, you know, definitely reached out and was following you. And I, you know, and yeah, we've had a few conversations, but not as many as we probably should, but I've been busy. You've been busy. You're a busy trainer. I'm a busy trainer, but I definitely wanted to introduce everybody to you. Now, in closing, now, what would you say would be your, because you have a lot of them. You have a lot of like philosophies and stuff that I hear you say, but what would, if you had to pick the top three things that you would tell first a dog owner are the most important things that they want to try, either train their dog or create with their dog or work on with their dog, what would say just three top things?
Man, so the first one would definitely be a recall, having some way to get your dog back to you. And I think you should have different versions of that. There should be like, this is exactly how you need to do, and then you can have more of a casual one. Teaching your dog to do nothing, meaning being able to lay down for long periods of time. So if you are going to, if you're watching a movie or something like that, your dog knows how to do nothing. And then having a good relationship, like making your dog want to be around you. You should be the most interesting thing in your dog's life. So if that means they like balls and tugs, you're going to use that. If they love food, you're going to use that. Some dogs just love some love and affection. So making sure that you have a good relationship with your dog, and I think you're going to be able to get them to do anything at that point. Because if you can get them to come back, you can get them to do nothing, and they trust you enough to try things, you can do anything with your dog.
All right, that's fantastic. That's a good note to end on. I definitely want to emphasize to people, listen to what Stan, listen to those three things. And I would defy any dog trainer across the board who would disagree with any of those things. No one, like really. No one would disagree with that. So, but anyway, so I just really want to thank you for agreeing to talk. You, I don't know if you know this, but you're my first guest. I just started my podcast. Actually, you're my second guest. I was my first guest. I did my first podcast, all me. So you're my first human guest. So I appreciate you coming in. And I do appreciate you talking about the topics that I brought up, because those are some things that bother me, the misconceptions that people have for different things. I really think I want people to really explore the protection sport side of things. Just explore it. And it's probably not as foreign as you think it is. The people who think it's so taboo and ooh, what are they doing? It's really not. And it's quite fascinating, but That doesn't mean you need to run out and do it yourself or try to get your dog to do it. That doesn't mean that, but you can still admire it. You can admire the training that goes into it and respect it as well. So I definitely want to introduce that. And I couldn't think of anybody better to do that than you, because you were one of the first people that I was like, hey, he's doing that. And it's not scary. That's not that scary. But anyway, but thanks a lot.
There's a good movie on YouTube called Canine Guardians, and it's about police dogs and the reason why they're trained up the way they are. And they break it down and they show, you know, the examples. They show dogs that weren't doing it and what they're supposed to do. And it actually is a very, very educational video on why some of the scenarios do look a little scarier than others. So, Canine Guardians.
And that's on YouTube, you said? Okay, Canine Guardian on YouTube. And then you can, I'm going to, in the description of the podcast, I'll have your social media, but you're just like me. Your name is the same on both TikTok and Instagram, Iron Sharp Canine, correct?
And it's Iron Sharp Canine on YouTube as well.
Okay. All right. Okay. So that's cool that it's the same. That's easy to remember. And thanks a lot, Stan. And you guys make sure you check him out on his social media. I will have all the information in the description. So thanks a lot, Stan. You have a great day.
This is Laurie C. Williams, the Canine Diva. Thank you so much for joining us today on Just a Dog Trainer podcast. See you next time.